in the grammar school. I'm very sorry that Mindy Stanley wasn't here, able to be here, and I'm sorry that we're not going to talk about POPP and how to organize your classroom so you're very efficient. This isn't quite as exciting in the sense that I think it gives grammar teachers a real charge to figure out a really great way to organize your papers and your manipulatives. It's just like a big shot in the arm. And communication, usually biblical communication, when you end up having to talk about conflict, it's usually a little intimidating, scary, frightening. So, sorry, wake up and smell the coffee. My name is Leslie Collins, and I just want to ask, can you all hear me okay? Apparently, if I turn my head over here, you can't hear me, so I don't want to have people who can't hear me. My name is Leslie Collins, and I'm the admissions director for our school in Maryland. The name of our school is Rockbridge Academy. And I taught kindergarten, and I was the headmistress for our school for a number of years, and I'm really happy to be able to talk with you today about biblical communication in the grammar school. While it is not about how to put your manipulatives in the right places so that you have them at a ready moment, this is equally important in the success of your classroom. Biblical communication is the weakest link to the success of your school. A surefire way for you to participate in a school that will be ruined in only a matter of years is for you and everyone on your staff to avoid biblical communication at all costs. So if you would like to avoid that and see your school come to ruin, then this isn't the seminar for you. But if you'd like to see your school successful and growing and healthy and strong, then follow the principles of biblical communication. The Proverbs, which Douglas Wilson was just talking wonderfully from, are so full of so many rich pictures for us and so many words of wisdom, and they're full of advice about communication. So I have typed that out, and that's for you to keep. You should have it on the back of one of your handouts. I'm going to lower this mic. For those of you who have just entered, there are handouts up here that actually you'll need. So feel free to come up and grab them and take what you need. Biblical communication, as I said, is imperative to the success of our schools. And I'll ask you to indulge me for a moment and consider for a moment the incredible miracle of using words. How many of you have read John Milton Gregory's The Seven Laws of Teaching? Good for you. For those of you who haven't, please read it. It's a fabulous book. In fact, we try to read it and skim it every year as a staff because every year you get nuggets of truth that you need to hang on to. John Milton Gregory says that words are the incarnate become incarnate. In other words, there's something that doesn't have flesh, and you're putting flesh onto thought. Thoughts you can't see, you can't feel, you can't touch. But when we put our thoughts into words, we make them incarnate. We make them real. And that is a wonderful miracle. And you consider for a moment how God has established his kingdom. Do you all believe that God is building a kingdom for himself? Yes. It's a spiritual kingdom. It's a wonderful kingdom. We want to be part of that. We want to be building up that kingdom, correct? How did God begin to build up his kingdom? With the Word of God. And the book of John, the Gospel of John, says, in the beginning was the Word. So words are very, very important. And who was the Word? Jesus. God with us. Jesus is the Word. So obviously, words are an incredible miracle. And of all the creatures that God has made, who uses words? Mankind. Because we're created in God's image. And so we have an opportunity to participate with God in building up his kingdom because he's given us that opportunity, not that we deserve it by any means. He's given us the opportunity to participate with him in building up his kingdom using words. Now, Satan uses words as well. And is he not building up a kingdom? Albeit it's a kingdom of sand, his kingdom will tumble. Is he not attempting to build a kingdom? And what does Satan use to build his kingdom? Satan twists words. You think back to the Garden of Eden. God said, do not eat from this tree. And Satan said, did God really say that? All throughout. And Jesus is quoting Deuteronomy to the devil. And Jesus is in the wilderness. And he's saying, no, 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 no. And Satan says, oh, but really, it's this. It's this. And all the heresy and all the apostasy of all the ages, it always takes God's word and twists it. And so, here we are, classical Christian school movement. We are a movement. We are happening. You know, 10 years ago in America, this was an unheard of thing. People were scratching their heads. Classical, what? And now people recognize, oh yeah, I have an uncle who teaches at a school, blah, 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 blah. And what are we about? We are about imparting knowledge through words. That's what a teacher does every day. You communicate in your classroom through words. It's a miracle that we're able to do this. And as you communicate with the children, with the parents, you are building up God's kingdom. I hope. Biblical communication is about respecting covenant families. It involves imparting and clarifying vision. It involves gaining assistance in discipline. And it involves resolving conflicts biblically. And these are the things that I'd like to touch on this morning, in these four areas. First of all, let's talk about covenant families. You know, if you're a classical Christian school, if you've been around in the association for a while, you know that invariably you'll find a classical Christian school that has the word covenant in it, or you'll find a classical Christian school that has the word providence in it. And these are two very popular words. Not that there's anything wrong with that, just these words. And then people want to, well, what exactly do we mean by covenant children? Well, a covenant is a promise. A covenant is a promise between at least two parties. When we say that we are raising up covenant children, or that we are a school for covenant families, or that education is covenantal, what we mean is this. We recognize that as believers in the Lord Jesus Christ, we have been saved. We have been saved from a hell that we deserved and brought into a promise that we do not deserve because of Jesus Christ. And out of love for Him and being compelled by that incredible mercy and love that He has given to us, we say, are generally most of you first generation believers in your family? Or some of you, are you second generation believers? Did you grow up as Christians? So you're, most of you are the first generation of Christians in your, you're the first one? No, okay, third one. I'm the first generation believer. I say that because I hope my children will be the second generation of believers. But most of us don't have a concept, at least I'd say, how about I'll just be self-centered. I have never had a concept of thinking of the faith generationally because it just happened to me, not now, but almost 20 years ago. But so when we think about the faith, we need to think beyond that. We need to think about, well, what about our children? Obviously, we understand that because that's why we're here. We want education. We want our children to have an education that honors God and imparts faith to them. Why are we doing that? To score points? Are we doing that because we think we can earn God's favor? If we train these children up, we do this, 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 and this, and this, then God will have to save our children. No. We are compelled by the love of Christ because of His abundant love to us, and we desire to show that love to our children and to show them the vastness of God's creation, the vastness of His kingdom, and see that kingdom being built in their hearts because we love them, and first of all, we love Him because He first loved us. And in so doing that, we're giving a promise to God. I want to raise these children up for your honor, for your glory. I want to do this for you. This is my promise to you. And God's promise is this. Generationally, He tends to work generationally. He tends to work through families. He doesn't tend to work only, I'm going to save this person and then all their children are going to be unbelievers. And I'm going to save this person and all their children are going to be unbelievers. And I'm going to save this person and all their children. He tends to work through families. He doesn't have to. He is not bound by our reason. But he tends to. And so the covenant is this. I raise my children for God's glory. He will be faithful to his promises. And that is a covenant. He doesn't owe us the salvation of our children. Right? We all believe that, correct? But so when we say this word covenant, I just want to make sure that we understand. I'm trying to define my terms. And the reason this is so paramount in education, especially classical and Christian education, is that we, as educators, have a specific role, and we also have a specific mindset that we need to be respectful of regarding that covenant. God has said, I will make a covenant between you and me, to Abraham. And that's its beginning of the whole familial covenant. He didn't say you and me in the school. You, as teachers, have no part in a covenant that occurs between God and a family, unless it's your own. And that's why it's so important to communicate to families. Because unless you're homeschooling your own children, which this isn't a homeschooling conference, so generally speaking, I think I'm safe to say, unless you're homeschooling your own children, you are not part of the covenant that is represented in your classroom, unless it's within your own family. Do you understand what I'm saying? You are taking part of that. So what is your role as a teacher? You are providing an educational service to families. You are providing a service to families. You go to a restaurant, mom's had a rough day, or mom's going to be honored today, and you know, dad and the family take mom out to dinner, and the restaurant provides a service to that family. When you go to school, when you drop your children off, when you walk into school as a teacher, you are providing a service to families. As a parent, you are receiving a service. Why? Well, because Jethro told Moses, you can't do it all. Delegate. And so that's why we have schools, because of the principle of delegation. Because where you have a multitude of people, you're going to have far many more gifts than in one person. So remembering our role makes us motivated to communicate with families. And keeping that mindset is very important. Frequent communication is the key to the success of the relationship between the parents and the school. And there are lots of different communication avenues that need to be taken. First of all, one thing that needs to be clarified before you even begin your relationship as a family and school, and I recognize that most of you are grammar teachers and probably not a lot of administrators are here, but one thing that I think is imperative, and perhaps this is just because I'm an admissions director, is that when families come to your school, they understand what you're about. There are various and sundry philosophies about admissions within schools. Some people say we are a covenant family school only, which means we only take Christian families. How you can determine for sure on your own that every family is a Christian, I don't know. But that's what many schools will say. And we have this contract and you have to sign to believe these tenets of the faith. And some say, hey, it's a service. You want our service? Great. You abide by what we believe? Great. You don't bother us? We won't bother you. But, yeah, we're not going to apologize for teaching what we hold to. And there are different views even in between those two. I tend to hold the, if this is a service, come, take our service, and see your kids come to know the Lord even deeper. But as you bring families in, they have to know what you're about, and particularly in the area of communication. So one of the reasons I give you this Peacemaker brochure is I hand this out at every family interview that we have every year, and I say the same spiel. This is what we believe about communication. We want you to understand this. We want you to understand that when we have a conflict, when we have a conflict, these are the principles that we're going to abide by, and we'd like you to abide by them too. So please read over this, use it as a Bible study tool, and understand what we're about. That's very important. And this article that I gave you, the fly on the wall, is about communication gone wrong. And I kind of wrote it because when I was an administrator, I spent my life, you know, resolving conflict. And so I thought, wouldn't it be nice to help people see how silly they are? And so I wrote that, and I give this to every family, although I try not to, I don't want to sound self-promoting, but I give this to families because I want them to understand how silly it is when we just don't follow biblical principles and how things just can be completely blown out of proportion. And what has happened, what families have said, is that really helped me to see what I need to be doing. That's why we're doing this, because we want to communicate with families well and honor the Lord in how we communicate with families and do our service well, provide our service well. So before you even begin interacting with families, before you even begin your formal relationship, before they're even accepted, make sure they understand what you're about. And then, as you begin your classroom relationship with them, every year you have a new group of parents, and there are a lot of things to be said. One thing that we have found to be very helpful in the need for daily communication is a simple, you know, those simple composition, black and white marble composition books. Every student in our grammar school has one, and it goes back and forth from home to school every day. And we encourage the teachers to begin the year with a happy note. So-and-so is just a joy to have in class. Really enjoy the questions he or she is asking. Obviously, you've been preparing them at home. It's great to serve you. It's usually the first day note. It takes teachers a while to do that for 15 to 20 kids. But it's important to begin the year on the right foot. And then the year can continue with communication, easy communication. It's very simple for a teacher to say, you know, I had to speak to Johnny about raising his hand today. Because it's right there. You don't have to look for a piece of paper. You don't have to wonder, well, is this a phone call question or is this an email question or should I get them at the door? Oh, John, I forgot to get them at the door. And now he did it again today. And if I had remembered to talk to them about it yesterday, it could have, you know, nipped it in the bud. It wouldn't have happened today. So the communication book is really helpful. It's a cheap 80-cent tool to help communication become a daily thing. It's like your vitamins. You've got to take them every day. In order to be healthy, communication has to be daily. As they come and pick up their children, as they come and talk to you about curriculum or whatever your ideas are, you want to communicate with them every day as much as possible. And as grades get older, sometimes it's more convenient to do it through email because the kids kind of feel embarrassed. Oh, yeah, here's the note from my mom. You know, a lot of times it works to do that through email. And you have a homework assignment sheet. How many of you passed out homework assignment sheets? Okay. And obviously we view each email and we make phone calls. Well, what I want to do for you is help you understand a better way to use these tools and a better way to communicate with families. And I'm hoping that we will be able to cover everything from the particulars of these tools to actually getting down and how to resolve conflict, how to do that well. So we use these tools that I've just described to communicate with the covenant families. And if you have families who are not covenant families, in other words, if you have families in your school who are unbelievers, wow, that is such a tremendous opportunity for you. And I personally, I think it's wonderful to make that a known thing that there are non-believers at your school, because then when they figure out that they're not a believer, they're not so embarrassed that they can't go help get help in discipleship. If you make it this, you're only allowed to be believers at the school, and if you find out that you're not a believer, we have to kick you out. Then they can't get the help that they need to grow in Christ. So it's a wonder. We've seen much of that happen at our school. It's a wonderful thing. But if you have non-believers at your school, that doesn't mean that you act differently with them. You communicate the same way. You act as if they are, and you communicate with them because perhaps God will reveal himself to them, and then it will become a covenant family, which would be a wonderful blessing. The purpose of communication, another purpose, is to impart and clarify vision. How many of you have a back-to-school night? Usually around the second week of September or whenever, second week of school, maybe the fourth, third, whatever. But sometime after school begins, usually. And How many of you use this night to cast vision for your families? What do I mean by this? When your families walk in to your classroom, they're ready to learn. And they don't want to learn just about where does the homework get collected and how do I turn in papers. They want you to tell them why you're doing this. They want you to tell them why you've radically changed your life and begun to teach at a classical Christian school when you could be making money elsewhere, when you could be having an easier, less stressful job. They want to know why this is a passion of yours. They want to know what you've read. They want to know all of the hedonistic pleasures that you are enjoying under the grace of God because you want to know Him and make Him fully known. They want to know that. And they want to understand the history that you are teaching and why you are passionate about that. So I would charge you with this. If your parents walk in on back-to-school night, especially you kindergarten teachers, and they walk in and they want to know, and you haven't given them a vision of your passion and the way your classroom works and the reason that you discipline students and the methods by which you do that, not just, hey, they get in trouble, they go out in the hall, I talk to them, we make it right, that's how we do it. If they don't understand that you are passionate about biblical resolution of conflict and keeping fellowship in your classroom, then you have missed a tremendous opportunity. And you have given over an opportunity to build up God's kingdom because you just wanted to be pragmatic and practical. So I would challenge you. And you know what, teachers? I know that you're much more comfortable talking with students. I know that you like to close that classroom door and be a whole different person than when you're with a group of adults. I know that it makes you uncomfortable. You just got to get over it. There's just no way around it. God didn't allow you to teach in the closet. He called you to be part of this movement. So move. And get out of your comfort zone, to quote a trite expression. Your homework assignment sheets, your weekly letters. Do you write weekly letters? Do you say to your parents, this is what we're doing? Do you cast vision in them? When you say, dear parents, we're going to be studying about Augustine this year, this next 2 weeks, and let me tell you what he was battling with. Let me tell you about his life. There are people who are actually, we're interviewing a gal who's about to hopefully come and teach at our school, who has a passion to teach at our school because she was a parent and because her teacher gave a phenomenal back-to-school night presentation, cast the vision. The mother is drooling because she wants this so badly for her kids. She can't believe that God has given her this opportunity to come. She ended up, her story is she came in at the last minute and all the, you know, we had room in the school and she came in at the last minute and she had no idea it was going to be so life-changing. She had this incredible back-to-school presentation and every week she got an epistle from her teacher because it was so detailed and so wonderful and she just was discipled by this teacher. Okay, there was a little bit of idol worship going on, but she loved this teacher and guess what? That teacher got married. That teacher moved away, and guess who she's going to replace? That teacher. Lord will. What an incredible opportunity you have. You are not just teaching your 15 to 20 kids. You're teaching the parents, and they want to learn from you. So use it as an opportunity. Use it well. Be a vision caster. Teachers, there are two kinds of people in your school. There are people who are on board with you in your little boat of classical schools. You could tell I was a kindergarten teacher. There are people who are on board with you and there are people who are not. When you are walking the walk of teaching, you have an opportunity to keep those people on board with you on board, help them not try to go overboard, fall over because of this or that or the other thing happened. And you have an opportunity to throw a life preserver to those people who are floating out there because they're not on board yet. Even if you are a Christian school that only admits Christians, you're going to have people who don't understand everything that you're about. Do you? I mean, is this just me? Or do you have people who understand everything you're about and are there for all the right reasons? It's not possible anymore. Not since the fall. So you will have people who are either on board with you or people who aren't. Don't judge them for not being on board, but say, now, what can I do? Not that it's all about you, but how can I make the most of these opportunities to get these people on board with me? Cast vision. Because the parents covenantally teach the kids. If you have a kid who isn't on board with you, well, let me say it this way. If you have a parent who isn't on board with you, chances are that kid's not going to be on board with you. What do you do? Do you reach the child through the parent through the child? No, you reach the child through the parent. So make sure that your homework assignment sheet isn't about this is due, and by the way, wear your tennis shoes on Tuesday. Make sure it's about vision. And you'll keep more parents than you lose. And you'll probably lose some because they'll be offended. That's okay. The other purpose for communication is to gain assistance and discipline. Remember that. You're gaining assistance and discipline. Who are the primary disciplinarians? Parents. We as a school are providing a service to families so that they can do their job more effectively. We want their assistance with discipline. That doesn't mean that we don't discipline. That just means that ultimately it's not our responsibility. We carry out the orders. They take responsibility for the end outcome. So, keep in mind, discipline occurs in loco parentis, which means in the place of the parents. When you stand in front of that child and you are correcting them, you're standing in the place of the parent. You're standing there because they have asked you to do this by sending their child to your school. And so you are not wearing your own authority. You are wearing the parent's authority. And it's all one big confused mess because your administrator's over you and you have his authority or her authority. And, you know, you actually have a bunch of people standing on your shoulders as you talk to this child. It's no wonder he's not scared to death. But there, you are doing it in loco parentis. It is not about you. So therefore, when you correct that child, and you correct them for playing with the shoelaces, or you correct, it's always the little things. You know, if a child lies to you, what do? You correct them, you call the parent, you email them, or you use that communication book. No question, right? They lied to you. But when they play with their shoelaces, you think, is this even worthy? You know what? It is. If you have to take time out of your instruction to correct that child, then it's worthy of letting the parents know. You're not nitpicking. Nitpicking is an attitude of the heart. If you have a nitpicking attitude, then you just want to catch that kid and get him. But if your desire is to see that child glorify God in his body and his mind, and so therefore you are teaching them, sit in ready position, give me your full attention, let's learn. And they know to follow you, and their eyes wander. They've been wandering a while, and then they wander down here, and then they're playing with their wire, and you had to call them up and say, now, Johnny. Now, you know, when you say, now, Johnny, I'm not saying right now, my heavens, you'll be writing all day. But when you have to the point where you've said, hey, Johnny, I need your eyes. You've said it two or three times that day. You call Johnny out in the classroom. This is my recommendation. And you talk to Johnny about honoring you, your authority, the Lord, his calling. He's called as a student. You're called as a teacher. Everyone doing their job for the glory of God. Now, Johnny, what do you need to say? Sorry, please forgive me. Make it right with God. And you go back in. If he's disrupted the classroom, you make it right with the classroom. Johnny won't do that again for a long time. And you contact Johnny's parents. Guess what happens if you don't contact Johnny's parents? Nothing. No change. No change in that child, really, ultimately, because it's about you scaring that child. But when you act on the covenant and you say, Mr. and Mrs. Jones, I had to talk to Johnny, and this is what we discussed, and we're right, but I wanted you to know, if that parent is wise, if that parent is faithful, they will follow that up at home because they love that child even more than you do. So keep that in mind. If an issue is important enough to talk to a student about it privately, then it's important enough to talk to the parents. And sometimes, in a discipline, I'm going off on a discipline role here, sometimes the students will disobey publicly and you have to publicly address them. You know, they call out in the middle of your class and you have to, in the middle of the class, rebuke them in a loving way. Then, obviously, you need to talk to the parents as well. Because when you stop talking to the parents, you have stopped acting on the covenant. And you have no business doing that, because that covenant is not about you. When it comes to your students, unless you're teaching your child, that covenant is not about you. And you have no business getting in the way of people trying to raise their children up for the glory of God, and God trying to bring these children to faith. You have no business standing in the way by not following up with communication. So, is it worth having someone else keep an eye on your class for 5 minutes while you write that note? Yes. Is it worth having a book on tape available so that when you need to write that note, you put that book on tape, you push play, and you say, children, we're gonna, at the end of the day, we're going to sit and listen to this book while I'm writing a note. And to train them to understand that covenant faith families are so important to you that you will sacrifice 10 minutes of instruction time to get that communication note written. It's very important. I know you think that the lesson cannot wait till tomorrow, but it's about a covenant, not about that one little lesson. And effective records must be kept if we're going to hold children accountable in regards to discipline. Unfortunately, we had that fall thing happen. And as a result, these children happen to also be sinners. And because they are sinful, they do sinful things. And we have to hold them accountable, or else they'll do it again. What I found a tendency to be in Christian schools is, I forgive you, and so we're done. Well, you can forgive the child, but that doesn't mean they don't need to continue on, go to the administrator, and then not have a note about that in their file. So that the next time it happens, let me tell you, administrators are dealing with about 25 different plates to keep in the air, all in 5 minutes. You've seen the look on your administrator's face when you say, just want you to know, Johnny did that thing again. And they're going, what thing was that? Seen that look? Well, that's why you need a record. And I gave that little form of record of student discipline, not so much because I think you have to use this particular type of form. It's just this is what we use. And when something happens, if it's serious enough that it went to the administrator, then we're going to keep a note of that. Because he's going to forget, or she's going to forget, or you're going to forget, and then you can't see the pattern, and you can't remember what happened last time, and honest to goodness, being fallen people, we have to keep pretty good tabs on ourselves so that we don't fall apart. So it's very important to do that. Not that we're trying to hold a record of wrongs. Really, we're just trying to keep the record straight for ourselves so that we don't forget what we're about. So it's very important to keep good records of that. And you can decide what you're going to do with that. Do you hold on to it from year to year? Do you, you know, expunge the record? That's another conversation. Your administrators must be made aware of discipline concerns, though. It's as simple as what I was just saying. You know, they need to be aware that there is a problem going on in your classroom, and you need to have a constant conversation with them. And usually it's an off-the-cuff because they're very, very busy trying to run the school. And what I think is very important for grammar teachers to be aware of is we tend to be, well, most of the time we're women. Sorry, but if you look around, we're all women, most of us, a handful of men, and God bless you. But women work differently than men, and when we want to talk about a child, we want to sit down and talk about it. We want to explain all the details. Well, see, at first I just thought it was because Mrs. Jones didn't like me, but now I've realized that, you know, I you know, all these, and the ministry's gone, I have 3 seconds left. Can you just give me, really, you need to train yourself when you're speaking with your administrator, the real nuts and bolts of it. I've been talking to Johnny about his shoes. I've been telling him he needs to give me full attention. I've talked to him 3 times in the last 2 days. I've told him next time he's coming to you. Just wanted you to know that. And they will appreciate that, because when Johnny walks up to them, and they're thinking, what's this kid coming to me for? And you're coming up in front of Johnny saying, here he is. And he's thinking, oh, okay, what was the history? They need you. They're relying on you. They're relying on you to give them quick history, quick feedback, lots of information. Here's what generally happens, though, I think. Because we're women, sorry if I'm being sexist, because we're grammar people, there's this issue happening in the classroom. We weren't sure what to do. We wanted to have a conversation, but golly, he's always busy. So we didn't really get an opportunity to talk to them. And we should have talked to them about it last week, but it didn't happen. And, I'll just let it go. And then 3 weeks later, you have a big problem on your hands. And, you know, I know there are people in this audience saying, that wouldn't happen in my school. Well, God bless you, because it happens in a lot of schools. And I talk to people a lot about things like this, and they say, oh, yeah, well, see, and we just thought it wasn't a problem. But then it began to be a problem. So the important thing for you to remember is your administrator has authority to act in the place of the parent. And they have been given that authority by the parents, and they have a calling from God to do their job. And if you are not communicating with them, and your classroom starts to unravel because this child is not getting under control, and their school becomes unraveled because children are, you have a part to play in that. So because we don't want to see our schools unravel and our classrooms unravel, communicate quickly, easily, effectively, simple. And don't think that it has to be a long sit-down discussion. Just to say a quick, hey, I'm sending him your way. 3 strikes. He's done them. He's on his 3rd strikeout, and he's coming your way. They appreciate that. Okay. The 4th and final thing, and the largest thing I want to talk about, is resolving conflicts biblically. And I hope that this is not news to you, but there really are no original ideas in the universe. All ideas in the universe have been imitated by God. Man is imitating God's thoughts. Or we're imitating one another's thoughts. And most of what I'm going to talk about is from the book The Peacemaker by Ken Sand. We are selling some copies at the Rockridge Academy table, but you can find it on the Internet. It's a fabulous book, and every teacher should read this book. Every person should read this book. But if you're a teacher, you really need to read this book. And if you're an administrator, you really, really need to read this book. It is about being a peacemaker. It is about resolving conflict. So I want to talk about that. I know that we don't really like conflict, and we don't really like talking about it, and we don't really want to admit that in our precious Christian school we could have a conflict. But the reality is that because of what we're doing, because of the incredible value of this education, we are going to have more conflict than we ever dreamed of. How many of you have been doing this for a couple of years? How many of you are you've been being in school for a couple of years? And how many of you are first year people? Okay. How many of you have not started yet? Okay. Good. All right. Well, I remember when we were in those wonderful days that hadn't started yet. And I remember thinking, because I taught in the government schools, and I thought, this is going to be heaven. I am going to be working with Christians. They love Jesus. I love Jesus. What could go wrong? When I worked in the government school, I didn't have souls at stake. I didn't have covenant families at stake. Now I did. And, oh my goodness. And then you start quoting the Bible, and then people get really mad. So, I had a lot to learn. In any environment where there are sinners, you're going to have conflict. in an environment where there are children, you're going to have more conflict because those children are the covenant children of those families. Even if they're not believers, they're their most precious gifts from God. And you don't mess with those gifts without paying for it. When we are interacting in a school, we have many opportunities to talk with other people. And in every relationship, there is an opportunity for conflict. You will have relationships between you as teachers. You will have relationships between you and your administrator. You will have relationships between you and children, and you and the parents. For some reason, generally speaking, there's very little conflict. Thank God. There's very little conflict between staff in most of these schools. Very little, thankfully, by His grace. And usually very little conflict between administrators. Usually teachers have somewhat of an authority issue. But we get over that. Some of us do. Some of us don't. But most of the conflict occurs between teachers and parents. So for those of you just getting started, I'm sorry to tell you that. But most of the conflict does occur between teachers and parents, and then the administrator backing you up, you know, protecting you and stepping in, and he says, okay, you stand here, I'll take it from here. But you will have to do a lot of it on your own. And when it gets really hot or just beyond what you're in authority to take care of, it'll go to the administrator. But it usually begins with you. What we need to recognize is something that is often foreign to our culture, is that conflict is an opportunity to bring glory to God. I used to think that conflict was an obstacle that got in my way. I had things to do. I had an agenda. I had a job to do. And why is it that 90% of my time is going resolving this or this or this dispute or, you know, dealing with discipline or whatever? Discipline is essentially a conflict. Why is it that 90% of my time is dealing with conflict? Because that was my job. That was my opportunity. But if I could just get this out of the way, I could work on my lesson plans. I could work on this. I could work on this. Why is it that I spent 2 hours and talk with this family and smooth over this issue that really shouldn't have been an issue, when this isn't what I'm really supposed to be doing? But you know what? If it's happening, God has ordained it. And He has called you to that moment. And that is what you're supposed to be doing. That's a very important principle to understand when you're in the midst of adversity and in the midst of conflict. It is an opportunity to bring glory to God. And it's an opportunity to serve Him. It is an opportunity for your character to be revealed and for His grace to be made known to you in a different way. God could have made the Christian walk such that the more blessings we receive, the more godly we become. And the more wealth and prosperity we receive, the more godly and selfless we become. However, given our sinful nature and that fall thing, God has orchestrated it that the more adversity we bear, the more hardship we endure, the more difficulty that comes in our way, the more godly we become. And the prophets and the saints and the martyrs of the faith are proof of that. You don't walk with God and have the easiest road to travel. And so you must understand that if you are going to say in this wonderful classical Christian movement of schools that there is truth and there are lies, there is light and there is darkness, there is right and there is wrong, then you are walking the road less traveled and you are going to have adversity and it's going to be painful. But like the pilgrim in Pilgrim's Progress and Christian in Pilgrim's Progress, you will find that you would not trade it for the world because it will make you more like Him. And that is our desire. when we are walking this path, we recognize that adversity may come our way. We recognize that it's frightening. When we enter into a conflict with a family, we're scared. Most of us. And we don't want to do it. We don't feel peaceful about being a peacemaker. I just don't have a peace about it, Leslie. I've prayed about it, and I know that you think I should confront this person because Matthew 18 tells me I should go see my brother in love. I don't have a peace about it. God never said you would. He never said you would. And His grace is in the moment that you need it. He never gives you your ticket till you get on the train. So, when you are about to walk through that conflict, that conference with that family, you've done all this communication, you've written it down, the communication book comes back and forth, it's getting difficult, it's beyond what you can write, you need to have a conference.